Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another riveting episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host and producer is Soapy Schlesinger.
Hello.
Hello. And today we are going to be tackling the subject of urban cheesemaking.
Crazy.
Totally crazy, totally possible, totally happening before our very eyes. So, you know, not too many generations ago, much of our food was produced directly in or around cities. But with the advent of different technologies, you know, railroad, refrigeration, then trucks, preservatives, et cetera, food production has been sort of relegated to areas that are much farther away from urban centers. However, there's a revolution that is happening all over the place, it seems. We've heard a lot about urban gardens and farms, backyard chickens, and rooftop honey. But today we're here to talk about a different breed of urban food producer, the urban cheesemaker. Yes. And we've found two cheesemakers from two continents to talk to you about it today. The first segment of our show, we're going to be talking with Bill Oglethorpe, who makes cheese in London. And the second segment of our show, we're going to be talking with Elena Santigade, who makes cheese right here in Brooklyn, New York. So, Bill, are you on the line with us?
Oh, yeah. I'm here, yeah. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for being on the show. I know it's late.
Yeah.
No, it's a pleasure. Yeah.
So, can you tell us a little bit about your cheese making operation and where it's located, and maybe just, I don't know, yeah, how you stumbled into making cheese in the center of London?
I'm in Bermondsey, which is about 10 minutes from Tower Bridge. And I worked with Neufeld Dairy for about 15 years. And before that, I was in Switzerland and in an agricultural college. So I learned about farming in Switzerland.
Are you from England originally?
I was born in Zambia, grew up there, and then I went to Switzerland. So I was kind of British just because I was in a British colony, I guess. And then I had family in England, so I came to England about 20 years ago.
Wow. So what made you decide to go to agricultural college in Switzerland?
I was interested in farming and food, and it was a Swiss friend in Zambia who was working with my father just offered me the opportunity. So he organized for me to go to school in Switzerland.
And was your focus... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. So I just took that opportunity to, you know, learn French and learn about farming.
Wow.
And was your focus always dairy, or did you pursue different things at the college?
Well, it was basically sort of Swiss farming, which is a small-scale farm. Most have 30 cows and about 120 acres of mixed production. You know, they have a little bit of mountain pastures, and then down in the valley they have some crops and So it was, yeah, mixed, small scale mixed farming.
So you really, you learned about all the aspects of running a small farm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did you find your way then from Switzerland and these very pastoral, beautiful country places to London?
Well, I guess circumstances, maybe visas and family, and then I found a job at Neil's Yard Dairy, which sort of reconnected me to the countryside and the production of food. I think that's more or less the route.
And when you first started working for Neil's Yard, were you working in the shop, or did you go around to the farms to source the cheeses? What was your position?
I was in the shop in Covent Garden, just retailing.
Mm.
And then eventually gravitated towards the affinage and the cheese-making side. So I went to visit farms, and we looked at production problems. And the dairy also sent me on a cheese-making course in France to a school that I knew of. And so I learned a lot more about cheese-making there. So, and then came back, and then I wanted to get more involved in the cheese-making and was going to work with Randolph on a farm. Then there were other opportunities to make cheese in London, so I took the opportunity to try and make cheese in London.
Wow, and how did you start? It sounds like such. I know Neil's Yard Dairy, for our listeners who might not know, actually started off as a small dairy producer. Actually, Randolph, I believe, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, but I know he made yogurts and some fresh cheeses. And so, anyways, I find it interesting that then, you know, years down the road, one of his employees/proteges would go on to make cheese in London. He had to be pretty happy about that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that the supplier that supplied the dairy in the beginning is the farm that's supplying me with milk now. So, and they have the same setup that they had 20 years ago when they were supplying Neil's Yard Dairy, or Neil's Yard Creamery, as it's known now.
Wow.
So I can get the milk straight from the milking parlor without it going through the plate cooler or into the tank. And put them up straight into churns, and that was set up years ago, and they still have it. So, yeah, no, it's all the old.
I was wondering,
network, I guess.
If you could maybe talk a little bit more, just going into the logistics of making cheese in a city as opposed to a rural setting. You just started touching on it, but I'm sure there are some things that you might not have to deal with, or additional logistics that just don't come up as much in a rural environment.
This is something as close as possible, so I can pick the milk up warm and have the starter in and not have to handle it too much in terms of pumping and chilling and reheating. So I want to sort of approximate what I experienced in Switzerland in the Alps, in Etiva, where the milk was just milk and then put in the vat, starter, and then cheese was made without any handling. So I approximate that, really.
So what?
I go there at 5 a.m. while they're milking, get 300 liters. The starter's in the churns. So during the journey of an hour and a half, the milk is ripening. Then it's in the vat. It's 30 degrees. So what's that, about 90 Fahrenheit? And then I just have to heat it up a little bit, put the rennet in, and then in half an hour I've got curds. And so the cheese is done more or less into molds by about 10 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah, that's more or less the process I've come up with.
Wow. So that's dedication and long hours.
Yeah.
What time do you get started in the morning to drive out to the dairy?
About 4:30, I'm driving out there.
Wow.
And then yeah, just so I can get the milk warm and while they're milking, and also miss the traffic so I don't get stuck in traffic on the way in.
That's true. It's a different kind of commuter's worry when you have a truck full of milk ripening.
Yeah, yeah.
Than just that's different than just being worried about getting to work on time.
Yeah.
Wow. So can you tell us a little bit more about this farm that you work with? Because it's an integral part of your business. What kind of cows do they have, and what other things do they do with their milk?
It's an organic farm. They have about 250 cows, and they've been breeding in Montbéliard cows that are from the east of France that make Comté, and they also have some Swedish brown, and then the black and white Friesian Holstein. So they've been trying to make the herd a little bit more hardy, reduce production, but also reduce problems you get with high production, like lameness and mastitis, and also they don't live so long, I guess, with high production. So they're trying to make them a little bit more hardy and long-lived and better quality and all that. Low maintenance, I guess. So they graze them on grass in the summer, totally out on the grass in the sort of the rotational, rational grazing, what do they call it in the States?
Rotational grazing.
Yeah,
same.
Rotational grazing, yeah. Sort of optimize the growth of the grass and reduce the need for winter feed and stuff like that. I mean, they don't totally do it the way I would do it myself, but they seem to orientate production more towards the winter. They peak production and use winter feed more than I would like to do. But I'd like to pick up the milk just in the summer while they're on grass.
But do you make cheese year-round?
I might be, just because of financial pressures. But if I've got the choice, then I just make it in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering, can you tell us a little bit more about your facility? I know you said you're located in Bermondsey, but it's a pretty unique setup. I'd love if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I've just recently moved, so I've just built a new space. So in May, I moved to this new space. It's a railway arch, and it's about 2,000 square feet in total, so it's quite a big space. And the room, the cheese making room, is about 300 square feet. And the equipment I use is from the Alps. So I've got a copper vat, and I use gas fire to heat it up. And I have a press from the Alps as well, and a mold. I chose that system because of the simplicity and the low investment that you need to start with. But I'd like to make other cheeses, like fresh lactic and sort of medium, Camembert, Reblochon type cheeses. Because now I have the space to do that. Whereas before I moved, I was squeezed in by the people I shared the arch with, who were brewing beer, and it's such a success that we couldn't move anymore for beer.
That seems like a place where I would like to be stuck.
Yeah.
A railway arch full of cheese and beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just have an apartment there.
So what kind of cheeses do you currently make?
There's two types. I call them Bermondsey hard-pressed cheese. It's a bit like a Gruyere. It's cooked and pressed and salted. And then the other one's Bermondsey Friar cheese, which is a cheese from Venice that's a bit like halloumi. But you make it like a hard cheese. I guess it's at the stage where you'd make mozzarella. So you have lots of rennet and stirring and cutting. But instead of pressing it, I just let it drain in square molds and have add very little salt, then chill it. And then you fry it in slabs, basically, like halloumi. And it's really good with garlic leaves or pepper, or I know there's various, and in burgers I guess it would work. So that was in order to get a cheese that I could make and sell within a couple of days, and then the hard press I could make at the same time but keep for 6 to 8 months.
Right.
And the Friar cheese, I had the pleasure of trying when I was in London in June, and I think I could eat like easily a half pound of that in a sitting. It is so good.
Yeah, all right, that's the idea, yeah.
Easy to love. Yeah. Well, we only unfortunately have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to talk a little bit about where people can find you and your toasted cheese sandwiches and other things that you do, because you've garnered quite a bit of acclaim for your cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in so it's Maltby Street Group, I guess that's the group of traders I'm with near Tower Bridge. I'm in Bermondsey. I guess you could look on my website, the Cup of Casing website, for the address.
Oh yeah, what is your website for everyone who's listening? So if they want to log on.
www.cupofcasing.com.
And Cup of Casing is, tell me if I'm wrong, KAPPACASEIN.com.
That's right.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Oh, that was pressure.
Well done.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I'm at the Real Food Market next to the Royal Festival Hall on the South Bank. So I'm there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday now.
Great. So you're there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then on Maltby Street, when does that market take place?
Friday and Saturday.
Oh. Great. And if it's okay with you, we'll put all of this information on our blog as well. So if people are looking for it, they'll have a second source to find a link.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's fine. Yeah. That'd be good.
Yeah. Well, sadly we've run out of time, but I hope that you'll come back on the show at some point, and I hope that I find myself in London again soon so I can eat some more of that Friar cheese. I'm getting a craving just talking about it.
Okay, good, yeah. I'll have some new cheeses, hopefully, by then.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and stick with us. We'll be back with Elena Santigade, Making Cheese in Brooklyn.
Morning, son.
Morning. I was sitting in the public library in Sermon Street just now, skimming through Rogue Harry's by Horace Walpole, when I suddenly came over all peckish.
Peckish, eh?
Esurient.
Eh?
Yabberall, ungly-like.
Ah, hungry.
In a nutshell, so I thought to myself, a little fermented curd will do the trick. So I curtailed my wall-polling activities, sallied forth and infiltrated your place of purveyance to negotiate the bending of some cheesy comestibles.
Come again?
I want to buy some cheese!
Ah! I thought you were complaining about the music.
Oh, heaven forbid, I'm one who delights in all manifestations of the Terpsichorean muse.
Sorry?
I like a nice dance, you forced me.
Anyway, who said that?
Now, my good man, some cheese, please.
Yes, certainly, sir. What would you like?
Well, how about a little Red Leicester?
I'm afraid we're fresh out of Red Leicester, sir.
Never mind. How are you on Tilsit?
Never at the end of the week, sir. Always get it fresh first thing on Monday.
Tish, tish. No matter. Well, 4 ounces of Caerphilly, then, if you please, stout yeoman.
Ah, well, it's been on order for 2 weeks, sir. I was expecting it this morning.
Yes, it's not my day, is it? Bel Paese?
Sorry.
Red Windsor?
Normally, sir, yes. But today the van broke down.
Ah. Stilton?
Sorry.
Gruyere, Emmental?
No.
Any Norwegian Jarlsberger?
No.
Liptauer?
No.
Lancashire?
No.
White Stilton?
No.
Danish Blue?
No.
Double Gloucester?
No.
Cheshire?
No.
Any Dorset Blue Vinny? No.
And we are back on Cutting the Curd after the funniest cheese skit of all time. Be assured, at Neil's Yard Dairy, you will find all of those cheeses that they were talking about and more. And probably you can find all those cheeses in our next guest's apartment. We are here with Elena Santigade, who is an urban cheesemaker in Brooklyn. So thanks for coming out to Roberta's to be on the show.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So I guess before we get into your cheese making, tell us about what's your, you know, real job in quotation marks and.
Yeah, so I don't do cheese making commercially or for my quote unquote profession, but during the day I work at a sustainable transportation advocacy organization where we advocate for bicycling, walking, and public transit in New York City.
Transportation cool. Alternatives.
Yes, that is the name yes. of the organization.
Such a great organization. And I feel such like, you know, kinship because my logo is a bike.
Yes.
For my cheese shop. And I feel like we were talking about this before the break. We need to get some biking and cheese activities happening.
Absolutely.
In New York. Yeah. So Elena, how did you end up becoming fascinated by cheese? And when did you make the leap from just being fascinated by it to actually trying to make it?
So I guess I'll start about with when I sort of became very serious about cheese, and because I've always loved it. My family's from Wisconsin, and I'm
Italian. Oh, whereabouts?
Northern Wisconsin, a small town called Three Lakes.
Grandparents in Stevens Point.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I was only ever up real far north once.
Yeah, it's actually hard to get really fantastic cheese that far north, unfortunately. Hmm. But, so cheese, all lifelong cheese, but it was really a few years ago when I worked in publishing, actually, that I was tasting cheese and getting more excited about cheese, and actually set up a small group in my office, a little cheese club, so that I could taste many cheeses a week without spending all of my paycheck. And the cheese club really kind of kicked things off for me, because I got to taste so many cheeses and think about it in a little more of an organized way. You know, it was very relaxed and informal, but it was still a good opportunity to go around town and talk with a lot of cheesemongers all over New York, which I started doing more and more over the years. And then it really was last year that I started getting much more interested in cheese and the process behind this very simple but dynamic product that I loved so much. And so, yeah, really just about a year ago was when I started becoming interested in making cheese.
And what was your first batch of cheese, and how did you go about learning for that first batch?
Oh gosh. as opposed to Bill, who was properly trained. I'd actually been making ricotta at home. I think a lot of people have experienced with making ricotta, and it's really satisfying. I've been making that for a few years. So that technically, I guess, would be my first cheese. But about a year ago, I tried to make some fresh goat cheese. I think it was goat. And of course, knowing nothing, I got some sort of very simple instructions somewhere. I'm not even sure where. But I skipped over a few key steps and basically just ripened some milk a lot. And, you know, I always sort of joke about how I'm self-taught and I've never had any official training. I've always had other careers going on. I live in New York City. And so I really have learned cheese making by failure, I think, and that has led me towards success, which is actually, I think, given me a good foundation for knowing what I'm doing now.
You know, I think every cheesemaker learns by failure, no matter how much training you've had.
That's probably
true. It's really hard to make good cheese. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And what about your setup? What's your kitchen like, and where do you get your equipment?
Yeah, my cheese make room is about 100 square feet. I live in a small apartment in Brooklyn, and so I make cheese in my kitchen. And luckily, it's a fairly large kitchen for New York City standards. But basically, I have a lot of equipment that's stowed away up on high shelves and in cupboards that all kind of magically appears when I'm going to make cheese, that I lay out and sanitize, and it, the whole place kind of transforms into this little miniature cheese making room. And when my cheese is draining or drying, I carry it into the other room so that I can cook in the kitchen without sort of screwing things up.
Wow. And so what, you know, practical tips for home cheesemakers, what are like, you know, in terms of finding your equipment, and then just in terms of like keeping things, you know, clean and just, you know, doing a good job, what would your like top five be?
Yeah, I think that, you know, keeping things clean is probably the biggest challenge for maybe all cheesemakers, but especially home cheesemakers when you're also cooking and, you know, you've got a bowl of fruit sitting out and all kinds of stuff happening, especially if you live in a small space. So, you know, for me, I just try to not do anything else while I'm making cheese, try to kind of clear the area of anything food related. And, you know, in terms of a setup, I'm still tinkering with how best to go about it. I have an extra little, like a dorm fridge, in which I age my like hard wheels of cheese. And I have a whole sort of crazy setup in there with bowls of water and humidity, you know, tracker and rags that are dispersing the humidity throughout the fridge. And it's kind of a constant battle because the nature of a refrigerator is to
dry everything out. Yeah.
So I have that, and then I have a small wine cooler, actually, that I use for fresh cheeses because it's not very large, so I can kind of rotate cheese in and out of there easily.
And so what kind of cheeses have you made? It sounds like this is a pretty extensive array.
Well, I decided to make that I would make the cheeses that I really love to eat, which is probably a good idea for any kind of work or hobby in food. Or beverage, I suppose. So I've been making goudas and cheddars mostly, with goat milk and cow milk. I think my favorite cheese is like an aged goat milk cheddar type. So I've been working on that a bit. And then I'm working on one manchego, which is really fun. And I get to paint it 3 times a week with olive oil, which I like to do. and then I make a lot of little fresh lactic cheeses.
And how much will you make in a go? How big is like a typical batch for you?
Not big at all. I forgot to say, I also make mozzarella.
Oh, cool.
And that's something that I've been doing the whole way through. And I teach little mini mozzarella making classes in my apartment as well.
Oh, and if people want to find out about that, how can they find out?
They can find out on my blog, which is wannabemonger.com.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm going to come. I have never made mozzarella successfully.
Yeah, it's really, it's, you know, there are different ways to do it, more complicated ways. But for a quick mozzarella that'll satisfy your craving, I can teach you how, which is fun.
Cool.
Yeah, but I don't make things in big batches, that's for sure. I have a 4-gallon pot, big, you know, stew pot kind of thing that I hoist off of the top of a bookshelf when I make my cheese. And that's what I use. And in the beginning, actually, I didn't have that pot and I didn't even really know that existed in a place where I could find it. So I did this crazy thing where I would try to make cheese in like 3 different pots and then put it all together. Really complicated things, but now it seems really easy.
Yeah.
Now, is there a New York City cheesemaking community? You know, I think about like the New York City Homebrewers Guild and stuff like that. Is there a fellowship of cheesemakers in New York?
You know, it's a really good question. I found a couple of people online. I know there's this, there's one guy who I haven't actually contacted, but he has a really fantastic blog that I'm blanking on the name of, but maybe we can add it to the roundup later on.
Yeah.
But he was making cheese in his kind of brownstone basement that looked pretty incredible and I think is now opening a dairy upstate or something like that.
Wow.
But, you know, I haven't actually reached out too much. It's funny, like the whole process of cheese making in one sense is so solitary and meditative, which I think is part of why I like doing it, especially outside of a kind of very social job. But then the more that I do it and talk to people about it, the more people get excited about it and want to experience it with me somehow. And people really come on board. So right now I've just sort of been shocked at the community of people that I've met through doing it who are just interested in it. And I really have yet to connect fully with people who are also making cheese at home. So if you're out there, email me.
Yeah. Wannabemonger.com.
We'll start a club.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic. Get together. Everybody brings their wheels of cheese. You can taste them and troubleshoot. And
absolutely. Cool. I would love it.
Yeah.
Now, do you have further plans for your cheese making career? Do you feel like you would eventually maybe want to have some sort of a cheese business? Or do you think that home cheese making is it and it's very satisfying and that's enough?
Well, for now, I'm just kind of seeing where the momentum goes. I think it part of why it's so nice is that it's this balance from the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. So I kind of defend that feeling a little bit and don't want to give in too much to letting it be the main event. But also, for me at least, part of the reason why I make cheese is because I want to understand more of what is contributing to the cheeses that I love to eat and to buy so much. I mean, I don't think, you know, technically I could make a cheese that was going to rival some incredible farmstead wheel that was made with fresh milk. And, you know, sort of there are some barriers to entry there in the urban cheese making that I haven't figured out yet.
Right.
But I do really like being able to understand why certain cheeses taste the way they do or have the texture that they do. And all of that sort of contributes to my angle on this whole thing. And so I'm not quite sure where it'll go yet, but it's really fun so far.
And can you give our listeners any pointers on where to get different supplies, such as cultures or books that are helpful? Because I feel like that's, you know, they can be sort of difficult to suss out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, New England Cheesemaking Supply, that's the website where I order most of my ingredients and my equipment. I actually bought my first like set of molds and starters and strainers and, like, you know, all my first sort of starter set in a very small town in Vermont at this little dairy supply shop called Bob White Systems, which I think
we really had you've had on the radio.
Which I thought was so wild because I stumbled upon them while visiting friends in the area. And I got great advice from a cheesemaker there. Cool. So that was really helpful. And I always, if any, but, you know, books are great and trying it out is great. And that's really mostly what I've done. But of course, the opportunities you have to actually talk to a cheesemaker or somebody who's at least tried it are the biggest helpers.
Yeah. Well, we've only got a couple minutes left. These shows always go by too fast. Yeah. But if you had to say, what's the best cheese you've made and what's the worst cheese you've made?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think the best, maybe I'll say two different cheeses for the best because I did different things with them. But for the 4th of July, I had a bunch of barbecues to go to. And I decided that it would be more cost-effective and fun to make a bunch of little fresh lactic cheeses. And I tried to make them 4th of July themed. So I think I powdered one with paprika and one with cracked pepper and maybe one with thyme to try and do some sort of red, white, and blue that, you know, I don't even know. And then I had just a plain one. And those actually turned out really great. They were cow's milk and they just had a nice, surprising, tangy taste. And they were really fun to share with people, of course, which is the best thing about cheese, really. Yeah. And then the other great one that I make a fresh goat cheese and then I make chocolate truffles using the goat cheese, which is a nice way to share that with people. So that's really fun. And then the worst cheese I think I've made was definitely that first one where I was just clueless, absolutely naive, clueless, just trying to make some semblance of cheese, which is a goat milk cheese that didn't work out.
Ripened goat milk.
Yeah. Ripened goat milk, not yogurt, not cheese.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, so when is your next workshop?
Well, I try to do monthly mozzarella making classes, and the September class is actually full.
Congrats.
So thanks. The October class will be probably in the middle of the month, but I always announce the dates on wannabemonger.com. So people can check that out. And I also sometimes host little unofficial beer and cheese tasting parties because I think it's really fun for people to talk about the tastes that they experience without using the regular sort of official lingo.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing your cheese making experiences with us. And all of our listeners should check out wannabemonger.com. And definitely check out a workshop, too. You can learn to make cheese right in your very own apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
And then bike at home.
Yeah, and bike at home.
There you go. All right. And so we will be back next Monday with another episode. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
And Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Anne Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Anne Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. This is a message from Fork and Anger. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anger, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sun-dries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today.